I'm Holly Waymont, and this is Pediatrics Now, cases, updates, and discussions for the busy pediatric practitioner. Click on the link in this podcast for free credit that may include CME, MOC, or ethics credit, depending on our topic or podcast. Today, we're talking about something our pediatrician listeners see often, headaches. And as you all know, it can be a headache to try and diagnose what is behind the headache. I'm thrilled today because joining me here in the podcast studio is a new member of our pediatric neurology team, Dr. Azra Akbar. Dr. Akbar, so you come to us from the University of Illinois.
Yes, I do.
I graduated from fellowship in 2015. My headache fellowship in 2015 and epilepsy fellowship in 2014. And that's when I joined University of Illinois College of Medicine in Peoria.
And why did you want to get a fellowship in headaches?
I was a migraineur myself as a child. So I remember my first migraine, maybe 5 or 6 years old. You know, car sickness, motion sickness, throwing up in the car. So it was pretty miserable. Also, a lot of people don't, in those days, maybe didn't believe that kids have migraines, you know, or headaches for that matter. So it's a rough diagnosis for little ones, children who can't explain it.
Yes. And it can be hard, as we all know, for children to explain exactly where the pain is coming from or what's wrong. They just know something's wrong.
Absolutely. Sometimes it can just be an aura and the kid can explain that, or it could just be abdominal migraines, or it could be just nausea or motion sickness, which is a precursor. It's a childhood equivalent of migraines. So, yeah.
So, and I'm so sorry you went through that. And so starting at age 5, you would get these migraines. Along the way, was it just you realized it's something I just have to suffer through, but I want to make a difference and change this at some point?
Absolutely. As I was growing older, I didn't understand what it was. I don't think a 5-year-old would understand. It's very hard for them to explain the quality or, you know, or what's going on, what triggered it, identifying triggers. That's very hard, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as I got older, absolutely, through high school and then through medical school, I realized it's migraineurs are an underserved population. Even the medications that are not up till recently, all of those medications like beta blockers that came out, they weren't really for headaches. They came out for something else like blood pressure, right? Or Topamax, which is actually for seizures, but then FDA approved it for children for migraines and it works. But the point, or even Botox for that matter, you see. So Botox didn't actually come out for migraines, but then it was FDA approved after experience from patients who received it for another reason. So yeah, so it's an rather underserved population, I think.
And more information is coming out about treating headaches, and you've been part of that as well. So you recently helped publish a paper in the Journal of Pediatric Neurology about treating children with Botox for headaches. Tell us about that.
So we had a group of, I want to say, about 20 to 30 children that I'd managed over the past 5 years, along with collaboration with a pediatric nurse practitioner and a group of other physicians. So yeah, we just wrote about our experience, like really a retrospective chart review. We gave them Botox and there's a remarkable improvement and limited side effects. But the problem is that it's not approved by insurance. For adults, it's easier to get it approved, you know. So a 15-year-old who's 70 kilos versus a 18-year-old who's 70 kilos. So it's kind of, I don't see why we can't give it to kids who are refractory to medication otherwise. Because taking a daily pill, right? We have kids who are taking these daily pills, sometimes 2-3 pills, and they're still missing school. And it can be pretty rough.
And because of the side effects of the pill and the headache, or both?
I think both. The headache in itself, I'm not sure. I mean, sometimes migraines can literally take you out for the day.
Right. I know that all too well.
Right? Or especially even just the aura.
Yes.
And then those, you can take the medicine, which may help, but how do you make sure that you're right back to baseline, like you're back to normal? If you're going to sleep off your day, then that takes your day out.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So in your practice, so you see patients at the University of Texas Health Science Center's clinic
It's at Wurzbach and Fredericksburg here in San Antonio, and then also at University Hospital.
Yes.
Are you doing that yet, where you're treating patients with Botox?
You know, I haven't yet. I started February 26th was my first day. So, but my other colleagues, Dr. Gross, and I know Dr. Fox, they are. Dr. Fox also gives Botox for spasticity, but Dr. Gross gives it for headaches too. So, yeah.
And so the challenge there can be, there's certain areas on our faces where it can hurt, but there's others where it doesn't. And then the number of shots can
absolutely
be a bit intimidating.
Exactly. The number of shots is intimidating when you tell somebody, oh, it's 31 injection sites. But if you look at the protocol, they follow the pain protocol, follow the pain. So I do that, whichever, because, you know, 45 units are left over from when you order it anyways, right? Because it's 155 international units in 31 FDA-approved sites. But I use the follow the pain protocol, which is if they have more pain on this side or if they, why waste it? So we just inject it. But you're right. So it's painful. And I did my own, because I do acupuncture for myself too.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So yeah, so the more muscular, for example, here in this trapezius muscle, it's not that painful. And I've tried it myself, you know, so I can actually tell the patients how it feels. I think here in the temporal area, it's not that painful. Also, it's a very small needle gauge. But this area, the forehead is, because there's, you know, it's a little bit more tighter. So this area hurts.
So you can avoid the forehead for kids sometimes, or just say,
sometimes
this is going to help your headache. It'll be just
true,
short.
True, true. So I just let the patient. So I just let the patient kind of a little bit dictate it too, because I don't want to make them miserable. Especially if I always start over here, at, you know, the shoulder muscle, because it's least painful. Yeah. So that can be. And then of course we have newer options available, which are once a month injections, the CGRPs, which are great, but again, not FDA approved for children. So it's FDA approved for 18 and above. But that's the whole point, you know, you try it for your 16-year-old or even your 17-year-old.
But insurance likely won't cover it.
That's right. That's right. Insurance for Botox specifically wants to show that you have failed a trial of adequately dosed more than two classes of FDA-approved medications for a period of 3 months, and you still have headaches lasting more than 15 days, which is almost always the case, honestly. Especially there's a headache syndrome called medication overuse headaches, right? And medication overuse headaches are very hard to treat because they're so used to using the higher doses of Tylenol, and now it's not Tylenol, actually it's more than Tylenol, and it's Excedrin, and it's the Triptan. Those are they're more harder to treat, you know? So just giving them one daily pill of antidepressant or a seizure medicine usually doesn't work. Sometimes you have to do a resetting with IV. There are studies on this. IV DHE, medication cocktail, migraine cocktail for medication overuse headaches. They're hard to treat.
Would you say Botox is highly effective, though?
In my experience, yes. And from whatever I've studied, of course, it's not perfect. There are certain side effects. We have another study that hopefully we will be able to publish, also a retrospective chart review from my job at University of Illinois College of Medicine in Peoria, in which we actually studied it on our 15 to 17-year-old, in which we gave them CGRP injections. Yeah, and I think that was a good response too, similar to Botox.
And you did, so do you do acupuncture on yourself?
Yes.
Why, is that hard to do?
No, I wish I had my needle today. I could show you. It's a really tiny needle. It's like a hair thin needle. So I'm new in San Antonio. I'm still trying to figure out my way around and, you know, finding a PCP or an acupuncturist. So all that. But yeah, I see the points. And that's not professional. I can't do it professionally on other people, but I can do it for myself. Kind of, you know, in locations like that. And it helps loosen up the muscle, kind of like dry needling. If you've had a severe back spasm or something like that, going and getting your massage and dry needling can help loosen up the muscle.
Do you hope to incorporate acupuncture or you could suggest an acupuncturist once you've been here longer for patients?
Yes, a more holistic approach, a vitamin supplementation, like magnesium supplementation, riboflavin, coenzyme Q10, massage. I highly recommend that for families and patients. I really do.
And prevention, any other techniques, lifestyle that you'd recommend?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lifestyle modification, increase water intake, and most importantly, identifying your triggers. Like some people will tell you, like there's enough evidence on MSG, tyramine-containing foods, you know, processed meats, aged cheese, aged meat. So all of that. And then sleep hygiene. So strong perfume, strong smell, loud noises. So kind of identifying those triggers.
And lunch meat can be a big
Absolutely,
one.
Absolutely, yeah.
And because, it's ubiquitous in our kids' lunches and in the lunch rooms and to make a quick lunch, but that really can be causing headaches.
Absolutely. Processed foods. Yeah, absolutely. And stress and anxiety of related. You know, you hear the kids usually in the summer, their headaches may get better because they get to sleep in more, they get to relax more. So that's the thing. So lifestyle modification, I totally agree with that.
A child who's being bullied could be experiencing headaches?
Yeah. Stress can do so much. You know, there's this book that says the body keeps the score.
I've heard of that. Is that, would you recommend reading that?
I highly recommend reading. I am listening to it on Audible like the second or the third time. It is so true. You know, a lot of people may not agree with me or they may, I don't know. But I speak as a patient too. You know, I'm not speaking as a physician. I'm speaking as a patient too because I'm a patient of suffering from migraines. Stress and anxiety can do lots of things to your body, and the body does keep a score. We don't know why I'm losing my hair. Like, you know, why are we losing our hair? Why are we, the cortisol, why are we gaining weight? Why are we not sleeping right? So, yeah. And it's all the stress.
And I'm sure social media is not helping it. Things.
Totally, yeah. Totally. What the kids these days have to go through, I think, is more than what we had to go through. We didn't have social media.
Right. It is stressful. One doctor we had on the show recently talking about social media, it's you see what you're missing, like what you're missing out on, really.
Absolutely. And that's the opposite of gratitude.
Yes.
We'll never be grateful like that. And then we'll never be happy. Because the mission in life is not whatever we do, like you get an education or you go to the gym. The goal is to be happy, right? Mm-hmm. The degree is just a paper, but there was a goal behind it to get somewhere in life, to be happy. So,
and we have coming up on Pediatrics Now, I'm interviewing a doctor who was recently on the front page of the New York Times for a book he's written. And he says, so he believes that social media and cell phones are taking away childhood now. So he has some solutions and a great perspective. So that's coming up in about a month.
Oh, that's great. What are the, I mean, I would love to know.
Yes, I'll know more after that interview.
Yeah.
And for our listeners, know that that's coming up. I know it's such a big topic in pediatrics right now.
Yes.
Back to the headaches. So let's go over, what are the warning signs, an update on that, where it could be that, you know, we know it's rare where it's a brain tumor or something serious, but of course we have to be very careful not to miss that. So what are the top warning signs there, like a headache that wakes a child up from sleep?
Exactly. Now, medication overuse headaches, hypnic headaches can do that too. But if you have a child who's waking up from sleep, you know, wakes up in the middle of the night with a headache and has vomiting or projectile vomiting, right? Or usually the thing is focal neurological findings. So focal neurological findings would be, it could be in a migraine with aura or a hemiplegic migraine, but that will resolve. A kid who was able to walk before and now they keep waking up and they fall. The gait is ataxic, as you would say, or they cannot walk in a straight line, right? Or they have neck stiffness, they have difficulty moving their neck, or they have a fever, or they can't see out of this eye, or this hand is constantly weak. Those are all warning signs, and absolutely, that needs imaging.
And Azra, is it a warning sign if you have one of those, or two, or...
Either one.
Okay, any of them.
Yes. So if you have fever and headache, okay. But if you have headache and neck stiffness, then that needs to go to the emergency room. That could be a sign of meningitis.
And can a migraine have the symptoms of a stroke, but it's still just a migraine?
It's certainly possible. Those are called hemiplegic migraines or complicated migraines or migraines with aura. But with a stroke, usually the symptoms do not resolve within an hour. With a transient ischemic attack, it can, of course, it resolves within an hour. But with a migraine, it usually migraine with aura, like the aura will proceed usually within that 60-minute period, followed by the headache, and then it will resolve. A TIA with also, yes, correct, resolve, but a stroke-like symptoms usually wouldn't resolve within an hour. So again, unless if it is the first time this happens, it needs to be seen. Absolutely. A workup needs to be done. But if it is recurrent and there's a family history and we already know about it, that it's happened many times, then maybe we can chalk it off to hemiplegic migraines.
So any of those warning signs, the patient would need to get in for an MRI quickly.
Yes.
And send the patient to the ER, or if you have a way like here, you can call the pager number for pediatric neurology and get a call back, and you all can say, well, we can see this patient right now, or send the patient
right
to the emergency room.
Right.
Any other warning signs that we didn't touch on that?
Other warning signs? Well, a seizure-like spell, or altered mental status, you know, like confusion, mental status changes, all of those things are some things that need to be seen, like, you know, and also one term that they use usually for the adults is the worst headache in my life, like a bleed, a subarachnoid hemorrhage.
Go to the ER.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what would you say to your five-year-old self now? So have we come a long way?
You've come a long way. Yeah, I would tell the five-year-old self, I mean, yeah, the motion sickness was awful. Yeah, the vomiting with the car, not knowing. Yeah, that's pretty awful. But yeah, tell them, it's all right, you survive. Here's the thing, you know, according to American Headache Society, you know, the criteria to meet a migraine, one of them is the MRI is normal. So it wasn't a brain tumor, I survived. Still alive.
Well, and I know it's often, like you said, not taken seriously. And yeah. And I've had migraines for many years, starting at a young age. And it was recently an optometrist was saying, like, well, we need to do something to figure out to stop the migraines. And it had been so long since anyone had said that to me in medicine and that he was taking it seriously. And then also that's when I talked to our neurology team and just some of those, like avoiding lunch meats, aged cheeses, you know, really with lifestyle, a lot can be done.
Lifestyle, absolutely.
But why isn't it taken more seriously?
You know, that's a really good question, especially in children.
Right.
I think the reason maybe is because some of us may assume that this is being used for other gains. For example, trying to get out of your work or trying to get out of school. I mean, it's possible you're being bullied at school. You don't want to go to school. So, and you do have a headache and you keep using it. So it's certainly possible. So I always, you know, if the family will say, oh, we need a letter for school so that they won't have to attend school. I discourage that a lot. Really do discourage that.
What do you say instead?
Usually what I say is that they should be allowed to take I have a letter, like a template, that says they should be allowed to go to the nurse's office and rest in the nurse's office for an hour. They should be allowed to carry a water bottle in bathroom breaks. They should be allowed to take their medication in the nurse's office. And once they feel better, they'll go back instead of missing school altogether, like just not attending school. Because that's like checking out of life. And then during my headache fellowship, I saw adults too. And unfortunately, you know, they were unable to maintain a job. And then headaches are multifactorial. And usually at a headache center, you'll usually have a psychologist, psychiatrist, a biofeedback specialist, a therapist. And the reason for that at University of Illinois, we had an acupuncturist on staff. The reason is because a lot of times migraineurs, chronic migraine, they will have other pain disorders. They will also have depression, insomnia, obesity, other health conditions. So you have to address, like Dr. Fox will often say, a whole person approach. Not just, okay, I'll fix your headaches. I don't know about your irritable bowel syndrome and your depression. Well, somebody else is going to fix that. So that's not ideal because it goes hand in hand.
And of course, we're talking about Dr. Brian Fox, who's on our pediatric neurology team at the University of Texas Health Science Center, and Sheldon Gross, you mentioned.
Yes, Dr. Gross.
So Does the Botox help with migraines only or other headaches?
You know, that's a really good question. Tension headaches too. Because if the thought process is if it will help relax the muscles too, yeah. And then, of course, rare, but occipital neuralgia. You know, I don't have a lot of kids. I recently started working here, but at the University of Illinois, I had only a few teenagers with trigeminal neuralgia. But so I'm not sure if Botox would help with that. But lidocaine injections, like specific injections for occipital neuralgia, of course, have been used. But again, lidocaine kind of patients will tell me will burn. And the needle is, so it's much more uncomfortable than Botox. So Botox, I think people get intimidated because it's 31 sites. Oh my God, 31 injections. That's what intimidates anybody. But once you get that and you see, oh, it's a tiny itty-bitty needle and it doesn't really hurt in this area. It only hurts in the forehead area. So, you know, once you get it and you see the benefit of it, and it's only every 12 weeks, so it's not every month.
And is it important to do it right at that about 3 month?
That's a great question. That's what they have suggested, but that's what patients also tell me. When it starts working for them, they want to make sure they don't miss their appointment.
And side effects that we should be aware of?
Limited. I mean, if we don't do it right, you can have a droop, you can have like an asymmetry, but again, we're not doing for cosmetic reasons. But over here, in the forehead reason, yes, it's possible.
You could correct that if there was a droop.
With a droop, yeah, it could cause, like for cosmetic reasons, if it's not done right, it could cause it. It can cause a little bit of asymmetry. But that doesn't apply so much to us because we're not really doing the face. We're not doing anything in this area. We're just doing the
head.
Exactly, the head. So yeah, the basic side effects could be bleeding. Now, if you have a bleeding disorder, if you're on aspirin, then yeah, that could be. So we make sure we tell them, yeah. And risk of infection, minimal, but certainly is possible.
So, Azra, what about for our pediatric practitioner listeners, what can be treated in the community pediatric setting? What are some of the symptoms? And that where, rather than referring out, let's try this first.
That's a good question. I have noticed this about the pediatricians here. They're pretty good like that. You know, they a lot of kids will come to us and they're already on, you know, so the guidelines are, you know, if you have more than 4 severe migraines a month, or for the past 3 months, you've had more than 15 days of headaches, or even if you have less than 4 days of migraines, but they're pretty debilitating, there's a family history of migraine, they're lasting a long time, they're affecting the quality of your life, then they've already started the patient on Topamax, the FDA-approved one that we talked about. Usually they do that, 1 to 2 milligrams per kilo. So for my older kids, I'll just start with 25. It now comes in a liquid. It comes in a extended release. It comes in a sprinkle. So that works. The ones I've noticed the pediatrician start, which is actually a good choice, is Topamax. A lot of them will do periactin. It's an anti-allergy apparently, but it works great for headaches too sometimes. And amitriptyline, Elavil. So that's what I've noticed. I've also noticed that they'll also just start the patient on as-needed medications, the prescription ones like Maxalt, which is also the FDA-approved triptan for children. So they're already on it, which is good. Sometimes you just have to adjust the dose sometimes.
So if you don't have, if there aren't any of those red flags present, try this first.
Yes, yes.
And then what about lifestyle changes do you recommend?
Absolutely. There are plenty of studies, especially in Europe, with the exercise and, you know, weight loss and headache improvement. So I tell them once you start feeling better, I want you to, the older kids, I'll tell them cardio. That raises your heart rate at least 3 days a week. I'll highly recommend that. And of course, like you said, avoiding aged meat. Deli meat, aged cheese, brie, gouda, pepperoni, salami, all of those, tyramine, turkey, all of those, all your triggers, MSG-containing foods, whichever ones are, anybody could be different. I know mine very well. But, you know, as they grow older, as the children grow older, they will realize that's even more. So basically, yeah, that water intake, increase hydration, sleep on time, eat on time, and avoid stress as much as you can. Yoga, stretching, exercise.
And for 3 times a week, getting that heart rate up for,
exactly.
Is it a certain amount of time you'd
30
recommend?
30 minutes, yeah. Yeah, American Headache Society's guidelines, yeah. And of course, releasing endorphins. So, right, the goal in life is to be happy with what we have, not what the other person has, what we have.
And that makes me think about, I know in Pediatrics Now, we love quotes. I love quotes. What quote would you like to say today?
I guess I'll say, that one. This too shall pass. This too shall pass.
And that's a great one for, it can be depressing if it's something great.
Yeah.
This too shall pass. But also in those painful moments that we all experience in life or having a hard day.
Yes. And life doesn't really, I don't know, maybe it does, but I feel like life doesn't really stay the same. It kind of, some days you have a good day, some days you don't really have a good day, some days you have a migraine, and the other day you did really well and, you know, the patients are happy. Sometimes they're sicker kids on the floor. So days change, things fluctuate. So, but yeah, it too shall pass, especially the suffering.
And as a doctor who has migraines and our doctor listeners, we also like to promote, it's important to take care of yourselves. Do you want to say anything there?
Yes, absolutely. Do what makes you happy. Do what makes you happy. Yeah. Just take care of yourself and be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Very important.
And you enjoy traveling?
Yeah, I do. I do. I travel. I recently, just January, I was in Qatar, where my sister is, and then I went to Pakistan, where my parents are. Probably be going to Canada sometime soon. Yeah.
Nice. Have you been there before?
Canada? Mm-hmm. Yeah, my brother lives there.
Oh, nice. And did you say you also like to cook?
I do, yes, yes, yes. But it's usually just traditional food that I know how to cook.
That's, do you have a favorite dish?
Yes, chicken curry, because it's so easy to make. Tomatoes and chicken, yeah, and some spices, that's it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Over a certain type of rice? Or just...
Yeah, you could do it with naan, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could do it with basmati rice, totally. Yeah.
And that, would you, I know we were just talking about like lunch meats and aged cheeses. Is it good for children or all of us to try to avoid that anyway, or just if it triggers, or do you want to say anything about that?
You know, that's a good question. That's a good question. So processed foods should be avoided. Fresh home cooked meals is always better. And I know it's so hard to do, but it's very hard for me to do too. I try to do it at least once a week. But yeah, avoiding eating out, I don't know, especially the fast foods, it's less than ideal.
And that's so hard, where it's so, for teenagers, as exactly. I know, you know, that's exactly what they want. It's highly palatable.
That's true.
But it is important to, I know one of our wellness doctor, pediatric wellness doctor, she was saying to say to the child, just not now, and try to have it be at least 3 months, like before they have the next fast food.
Totally.
What else would you, anything we didn't cover that you would like to say to the pediatric practitioner, the community pediatric practitioner listener regarding headaches?
Yeah, no, I'm very new here, but I think they're doing a really good job. Like I said, when the patient comes in, they're already on a pretty appropriate dose of daily prevention or appropriate dose of an as-needed pill. I think the only thing is we need to tell families, which is really not so much a problem here, but we need to tell them about medication overuse headaches. You know, we don't want them to be on Tylenol, Aleve, Advil, BC powder, Excedrin, any of those more than 2-3 days a week. Because if the child is taking it that much, then they need to be on a daily preventative medication. And medication overuse headaches are harder to treat. So, yeah.
And can those medications then be causing medications?
Exactly. There's studies on it. It causes, activation of the microglia in the brain, and they appreciate pain even more. So medication overuse headaches is a real diagnosis.
Wow. And it can be causing more pain.
Absolutely. You appreciate it even more. And then, the 600 milligrams is not working. Now you need 800 of ibuprofen. So, you know, it's not a good cycle to be in. It's not a good cycle.
And it's hard on the liver.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What would you say to parents, where a lot of our pediatric practitioner listeners, they're counseling parents about headaches, anything you would want to say? Like, so, you know, what you just mentioned is crucial. And it's such an honor to be talking to you today and being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you. I do.
What would you want the community pediatric practitioner to say to parents?
You know, I would say, don't keep asking your child, do you have a headache? How bad is it? Is it a 10? No, don't. See what the child is doing. Look at the child. Observe the child. You know, because if it's mild headache and they're watching TV, playing video games, and you ask, are you okay? Are you okay? You know, parents, they love their kids more than anything else in the world. So, of course, they don't want their kids to suffer. But I think it's a very thin, fine line. It's a very thin, fine line. And I let the patient dictate the course of the management. If they're able to, like, you know, usually migraineurs are type A personality. They're usually doing very well there. So it depends. How bad is it? Does it need to be treated? How soon does it need to be treated? Can they just start with lifestyle modification? Why give you a daily pill? You know, I don't like to give pills unless absolutely necessary. And if we can get away with lifestyle modification and vitamin supplementation with magnesium, coenzyme Q10, butterbur, riboflavin, and increase water intake, sleep hygiene, identifying triggers, removing stressors, then that's awesome, you know?
Yes, and how important that sleep is, where
exactly
a lot of times
absolutely
it's not put as a priority.
That's right. It's not. And these electronics, like, you know, everybody's house, right? Even though you're in bed, but you're still on your phone. You know, you're checking stuff out.
And social media wakes us up.
Exactly.
Checking an email wakes us
exactly,
up.
Exactly. Social media is a little bit of a problem.
And we don't get that deep sleep.
That's right.
Even if we do fall asleep after that, we also, in this Pediatrics Now news feed, there's episode on how to get a great night's sleep. And it's written by, it's a sleep doctor was on the show, and he was also on the front page of the New York Times, but his book, The Sleep Prescription. So he talks about that, social media and electronics in general before bed. So you can find that in this news feed for Pediatrics Now.
I would love to listen to that. Yeah, I feel like we heal when we sleep. You know, you feel better if you have a good, well-rested night's sleep. So it's very important. Can't survive without sleep.
Yes. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got here to San Antonio?
Yes. So I finished my fellowship at UT Southwestern, Dallas, Texas, in epilepsy and child neurology, and then headache at Baylor, Dallas. And then right after that, I went to Illinois. Yeah, and I really enjoyed my job. For a short while, I did come back to Houston, the Woodlands area. But then I went back to the same job. That was my first job. So, and then I just came here. I just needed a change. I still love my old job. I have wonderful, absolutely wonderful colleagues. Couldn't ask for better. But this is an amazing team of doctors, genuinely, like Dr. Gross, Dr. Larry, Dr. Fox, both are nurse practitioner, Dr. Lavin and Danielle, they're wonderful. Even our program coordinator. I feel like the doctors actually care for the patient. They genuinely do.
Yes. And I know, congratulations, the pediatric neurology team recently won the People's Choice Award by the Express News, San Antonio Express News here in San Antonio. So that's really exciting. And that I see that customer service, compassionate care on a regular basis. And it's so important. Before we go, is there one thing that you would want to say about, you know, this definitely does not need to be referred out, because when I talk to community pediatricians, they get I hear a lot of that, like, well, I don't want to send a patient who doesn't need to be seen by them. Or is it okay, even if the parent's worried and the patient is concerned, having a pediatric neurologist tell them what the pediatric community pediatrician would say anyway is okay.
So yes. Yeah, exactly. Whatever makes the parents comfortable. You know, if the parents just want to hear it, if it's a child who's had one headache in the past 6 months, but mom is very anxious because the cousin had a brain tumor. We see kids like that all the time. Okay, if it makes her feel better, sure. They don't need to be seen by a headache specialist for one headache in a year. But if it makes them feel better, you know, then absolutely. They should talk to us, absolutely.
How does it feel being here after having headaches starting as a child and then now having all this education, training, experience, and being able to help children on a daily basis?
It's a privilege. You know, our patients, it's a privilege to be able to be involved in their life because they teach us every day. You know, they're better than the textbook, right? You learn how to interact, you learn social cues, you learn different pathology, what medicines work for this patient or not for this patient. So yeah, patients are the best educators.
Dr. Azra Akbar with the University of Texas Health Science Center and University Hospital. Thank you so much for being here on Pediatrics Now.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Holly.
Great job. I'm Holly Waymont. Thank you so much for listening. Click on the link for free credit that may include CME, MOC, or ethics credit, depending on our topic. Our website is pediatricsnowpodcast.com. My email address is on there. Please email me with episode ideas or comments. Coming up next week, a deep dive into concussions. He's a sports medicine specialist with a passion to help people with concussions.
I was an athlete for high school basketball, middle school football, and concussions are fairly common, especially in contact sports. Studies and data has shown that football, of course, has a high rate of concussions, but you can also see it in sports you don't even think about, cheerleading and soccer.
That's coming up next week on Pediatrics Now, cases, updates, and discussions for the busy pediatric practitioner. In this newsfeed, you'll find an episode called The New Asthma Guidelines, What Were They Thinking? I interview a doctor who was on the expert panel for those guidelines, and he explains them. Also in our Pediatrics Now newsfeed, how to get a good night's sleep. If you search the newsfeed, you can find that episode where this doctor talks about the best ways, 7 days to your best night's rest. It can be great advice for you and for your patients. That's in the Pediatrics Now newsfeed in this podcast. It's called The Sleep Prescription. I'm Holly Waymont. Thank you so much for listening to Pediatrics Now.